The root cause is not body fat. It's not about being over fat. It's about being under muscle.
It's Evie here. Welcome to EML Radio, where we are always talking truth. All of those things you need to hear that nobody else is willing to say. Hello, truth seekers. Today's episode of EML Radio is sponsored by Strong Start. Strong Start is a new 90-day program designed to give you the opportunity through a structured program to start living your most fulfilling life. When it comes to eating, moving, and living, there are three critical things to develop in order for you to have lasting success. And those are self-discipline, knowledge, and accountability. So after devoting over a decade of my life to coaching in nutrition and fitness and mindset, I found myself losing accountability and self-discipline. Now I know exactly what it takes to create a fit body and a mind and a spirit to live to my highest potential. But over the last year, I felt myself just slipping, which is why I decided to develop the Strong Start program. Strong Start gives you absolutely everything you need to bring order back to your life, especially in a time of great chaos like we're in right now. It's designed over a 90-day period with three 30-day phases. So phase one is designed for you to really hone in on developing self-discipline. And then phase two allows you to start using that newfound discipline to incorporate more choices into your eating and into your movement. And then phase three, man, that gives you the runway that you need to put all the newfound discipline and knowledge into place so you can sustain this progress for the rest of your life. So Strong Start works by providing you a complete program guide with exercises for absolutely every fitness level so that you know that what you're actually doing is going to produce the greatest results. And it keeps you moving in a way that is safe and that's functional for your lifestyle. It also gives you the mindset exercises to ensure that you're shifting your mind into seeking the most from yourself every single day. Because all of the exercises and all of the nutrition advice in the world won't help unless you work on building that mental toughness first. It also provides you a hard-bound mindset and accountability journal so that you are writing down and tracking your progress every single day for those 90 days. And then lastly, the Strong Start Nutrition Guide uses my Colors Not Calories method in order to teach you how to eat so that you will never have to go on a diet again. Listen, Strong Start is changing my life and it is changing the lives of countless others. And it will undoubtedly change yours too. So head on over to evifats.com and learn more about Strong Start. Just remember, it is never too late to seek out and create a better you, but you just have to start. This episode is brought to you by Kopow, brighter food, brighter life. At Kopow, we allow you to treat yourself to not cooking. Incredibly colorful, powerful meals delivered directly to you that taste like you're dining out, but at home. At Kopow, we believe that colors taste better. We only use fresh, seasonal, colorful ingredients packed with all the good stuff, so boring beige foods need not apply. It's nutrition that you can actually see. Nature provides incredible ingredients year-round, so if it's not in season, you're not going to find it in our food. So look, diets don't work. Food you want to eat does. Kopow meals are perfectly balanced, craveably good, and help you eat right without you even knowing it. So whether you are looking to take a break from cooking just a few times per week, need business or lunchtime meals, or you're a busy family who needs a combination of meals for parents and kids, Kopow has the perfect weekly meal plan for you. So just visit kopow.com, that's C-O-P-O-W.com, and input your zip code to find out if Kopow meals are delivered in your area. Kopow, brighter food, brighter life.
Hi, I'm Dr. Gabrielle Lyon, and I am founder of the Institute for Muscle-Centric Medicine, and I practice a form of medicine called muscle-centric medicine. And as you mentioned, I am a new mother of two very little children.
Well, welcome, and thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy schedule. We have some mutual friends and connections, cool. But you and I have never personally met, which I hope to rectify that one of these days. But I have kind of just been a fan of yours and watched you from a distance for quite some time. And the reason being is my background as a fitness and nutrition and lifestyle coach for nearly two decades now. When I used to own my physical gym, my facility, now I'm just online and do programming online. But in my 12 years of coaching people, particularly women, and not just women, though plenty of men suffer from this issue as well, of not focusing on building muscle mass.
Yeah.
99.99% of people not consuming enough protein.
Right.
Particularly women.
Yeah.
And you teach to this, you speak to it all the time. And I was like, you and I really need to have a conversation because Great. We can really help some people out.
Yeah.
And recently I was just kind of preparing for our talk a little bit and narrowing down the things that I wanted to be able to talk to you about because there was a whole list. But the one thing that you had said, and I don't know when you gave this talk, but you had said, you were talking about two ends of the spectrum of obesity and frailty.
Yeah.
And so I kind of want us to be able to just use that as a springboard to dig into some things that you see that I know I see as well, and then kind of share your personal story and why you share these things and your passion behind it. And then hopefully we can leave people with some takeaways from our show that really kind of can help them start getting going in the right direction.
Yeah. Well, first of all, thank you so much. I don't even think anyone has ever asked me about obesity and frailty in a long time as it relates to be two ends of the spectrum, which in fact it is. Mm-hmm. Right now, we have this huge focus on obesity, and I really think it's a mistake. We are constantly focusing on adiposity and being overweight. There's this cyclical dieting that happens, and everyone is trying to fix this problem of obesity, right? Of being overweight. But if we care about root cause medicine and we care about root cause solutions, then the concept of fixing obesity and being overweight, focusing on adipose tissue, is trying to fix a symptom of a root cause. The root cause is not body fat. It's not about being over fat. It's about being under muscled. So if we care about actually trying to fix the problem, which on one hand is obesity, the other is frailty, sarcopenia, then we have to talk more about muscle. And we also have to understand that muscle is the paradigm in which we have to go forward in. The obesity paradigm is outdated. We can't constantly be focusing on a problem and the idea that this is the correct problem when it's just symptomology of disease that starts in skeletal muscle first, then we're not going to get anywhere. I guarantee you, if we continue down this road in the next 10 years, we're still going to be doing the same thing.
Well, because look where we've
hasn't done
a lack of progress out there, right?
Right. There's a lack of, right.
Exactly. The whole entire diet, fitness, even I would go so far now as to say healthcare industry, and my husband's in Western medicine, highly specialized, but still in the medical field. This approach isn't working.
Right.
And it isn't a matter of opinion. It's a matter of fact. Look around, look at the numbers. It's not working. So we do have to change it. And I'm passionate about changing it. It's like why I get up every day is because I can see this like freight train getting ready to derail and nobody's doing a whole lot about it.
Right. And the concept that we're still going to continue focus on and answering the same question, you know, about obesity is it's the wrong paradigm. So you know, for me, it's really about switching the conversation about being muscle centric and really understanding that muscle is this organ of longevity and it determines everything about how we age. And it's an endocrine organ, just like the thyroid is an organ.
Can you start there?
Like, you have to promise that we come back to frailty, because that's also really important.
No, and that's a big one for me, because the vast majority, that's where women came into play. The vast majority of people that I coached or came into our facility, and a good portion that still do it online, are frail.
Right.
And so that's a big, that's a really, that's a big topic for me. So we will come back to it, but we'll cover obesity and frailty, but I want you to just kind of dig a little deeper and give a real good definition for people that don't understand what you mean when you're saying muscle centric.
Yeah. So muscle,
most people just don't understand what that even means.
Right. So muscle, we always think about as it relates to working out and looking good and, you know, looking good naked or whatever. It's about being fit and being athletic. But the reality is that's one small part of what muscle actually does. Muscle is an endocrine organ. When the myocytes contract, when the muscle contracts, it secretes myokines, just like an endocrine organ. And these myokines, which have all different kinds of names, like interleukin 6 or decorin, there's all different kinds, but BDNF, they go through the body and they create a crosstalk with the immune system, with the brain, with the bone. In essence, contracting skeletal muscle as an organ system does exactly what other organ systems do that secrete hormones.
Got it. So this muscle is, contractions is, through movement, through exercise,
through weight bearing exercise, changes the way in which the body communicates. It, when you contract skeletal muscle through exercise, muscle secretes myokines. Muscle needs to be thought of and protected and really focused on as the organ of longevity. And this is a whole paradigm shift, right? This is not a common discussion. We are not measuring endpoints of skeletal muscle other than VO2 max, body fat, skeletal muscle mass. That is all we're measuring. Maybe we're going to measure creatine kinase, but we are not actually measuring biomarkers that relate to skeletal muscle in an effort to prove exercise prescription is effective.
Right.
This is a whole new kind of medicine that needs to emerge.
And this is what you do at your clinic.
This is what I do. Yeah.
Got it. Okay. Where are you located, by the way? Because I actually realize I don't even know where you are.
New York. Okay. But I see patients. So everything is virtual right now. I see patients all over the world.
Okay. Awesome. Very good to know.
Okay. Yeah.
So the thing, aside from the science behind it too, I'm a sociologist by trade. Initially. And so I'm always thinking about mindset and how people, I mean, not taking in enough protein, not having enough muscle, being obese, being frail, like all of this comes down to like what our mindset is behind the scenes, right? So when you're talking about muscle-centric medicine and building muscle, I love this conversation also from a mindset standpoint, in that we're not, this isn't an approach where you're talking to people about deprivation.
Right.
Yeah. All of us just as human beings are wired to hate to be told what we're not supposed to do, right? The minute we're told we're not supposed to do something, we resist it. And so when we're talking about building muscle, we're actually talking about taking the step to actually do more things for your body versus all the things that you're not supposed to do.
Yeah. You know, I think from a mindset perspective, one of the reasons why muscle isn't talked about is because it's hard to build, right? It's really difficult to get bulky, especially as you age, especially as women age. It becomes much more challenging to put on muscle, to maintain body composition. So there, it requires a bit of fortitude, right? It requires a bit of internal fortitude to essentially also do something different that you perhaps haven't been doing. Our culture isn't weight heavy in terms of lifting. A lot of the women, I'm sure a lot of the women that you see, their first idea is not to go lift weights. I mean, maybe it is now, but before maybe it was Jane Fonda, or maybe it was, I'm going to lift 5 pound weights and I'm not going to do heavy kettlebell squats or swings or, you know, deadlifts or any of these other things. I'm going to do Pilates and I'm going to do yoga. And then maybe I'm going to do the bar method and then sprinkle in some hot yoga, right? That's what people are going to think to do. Because it is a bit intimidating to go into the gym, maybe and lift, you know, like play with the guys and lift heavy weights.
Yep.
And that really does a disservice for the physiology and just the idea behind building muscle. It is.
Yeah, and it's so contrary. Yeah. It's so contrary to the whole movement of empowering women.
Yeah.
This is something I've just taken issue with for years now, where I'm like, wait a minute. We can't have it both ways. We don't get to talk out of both sides of our mouth. We want to be frail, weak. We have Gwyneth Paltrow out there telling people not to lift more than 3 pounds, right? Which we would never be able to lift.
Like,
don't lift more than 3 pounds. It's like, okay, well, you can't lift your purse. She's saying, right? So this is the message that's out there. At the same time that women are like, hear me roar, I'm powerful. It's like, you're not powerful if you have a frail body. Because this, if you have a dysfunctional, frail, or obese body, that contains your mind, right? And your mind is going to go along with what your body is doing.
That's absolutely true. And if your
dysfunction.
Body's... Right. That's a good point. I haven't really thought about it that way, but yes. A strong body and a strong mind go hand in hand, and it definitely is a resilient type of a thing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when we think about feeding, and I like what you said, that we're not taking away things. So, for example, my approach to medicine is not an approach of deprivation.
Yep.
I mean, we don't even think it really is about how do we augment and do things for our health? How do you add more? How do you add more protein, not take away? And listen, I wouldn't be talking about protein if I didn't think it was so vital to skeletal muscle. And right now we live in a space where the narrative around protein is highly controversial. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't. So I have been doing and studying this for 20 years. That is a long time. And it hasn't even been controversial for that long. It just recently in the last, I don't know, 7 years or so is really where this big controversial push of should it be plant-based protein or should it be animal-based protein, and we should reduce our protein intake, and somehow protein intake is bad for us. Well, if we stop eating protein, what are you going to fill it with? Carbohydrates and fat. What is that going to do for you?
Make you fat.
Right? What are you going
to do? Right. Make you fat and deplete your muscle.
Totally. Totally. So, you know, and then this brings me to the point of frailty. As an individual ages, the capacity to take care of your activities of daily living and not trip, not fall, not break a hip, mm-hmm. really are dependent on the ability of your muscle, your mobility, your balance. Once you begin to lose that, then it becomes much more difficult to gain that back. Mm-hmm. Right. And then, of course, if you do have an injury, there is an exponential decline in muscle mass, and that's your reserve, your amino acid reserve for repair and replenishing and recovery.
You got it. Yeah, I mean, that's my story, right? So I was a competitive CrossFitter for 7 years. So I'm highly muscular. I'm big, right? By standards out there, it was like, oh my God, like I have bigger biceps than I do quads.
Right? Right.
And I'm naturally just more muscular up top than I am in my legs. It took me like 7 years of really heavy lifting in order for me to even have any kind of visible muscle definition in my legs, because it's just the way I'm built. Right. Well, it's almost 2.5 years ago now, I had a shoulder surgery. And that was, well, I'll be 49 at the end next week. So at 46 and a half, 47 almost, had shoulder surgery. And that completely derailed me. Exactly what you were saying. I had to eat a lot more carbohydrates then. I obviously had to eat a lot of protein too in order to compete and recover. But at the same time, I had to eat a lot of carbohydrates, healthy carbohydrates, but more carbohydrates because I needed glycogen replenishment. I was working out 5 and 6 hours a day. But then when I had that, I know I don't miss those days whatsoever. Now I miss being that muscular, but the point in that story is once I had that injury and that surgery at that age, my body went through like a complete, I would say, state of shock.
Yeah.
And I didn't lose all my muscle, because muscle is one of those great things that it's like, it's there, it works. I mean, you can eat really well and maintain it, right? You can eat a lot of protein to maintain it, which I did, but just downscaling my workout regimen. At the same time, aging, getting into that late 40-year-old range, it's amazing what my body lost after that injury.
Yeah.
That's from someone really that had worked 7 years to build nonstop.
I think that's
think
really
about
good
the average person.
Right? Yeah, that's such good perspective for you to talk to people about, because unless you go through that, and arguably it's inevitable, everyone is going to get injured some way, somehow, right? It's like preparing for the storm. People don't understand that there is this exponential decline in muscle mass, and you experienced it as a competitive athlete. So that's, it's fascinating and phenomenal for you to be able to tell people and then allow it to protect them from themselves, you know?
Right. So, 'cause if I didn't have that muscle mass to start with, think about that. Yeah. And I see women all the time. It's funny, when I moved here 17 years ago from Houston, and I had been boxing when I was down there. I love that. It was before I got into CrossFit. I loved gritty stuff. And then I moved up here and I was like, I don't know what I'm going to do to work out. So I joined this Pilates group, and the gals were older than me at the time, but fast forward, like probably 10 years, mm-hmm. there was a gal that was in that Pilates group, and they were all very interested in just being skinny,
right?
What size clothes they wore. That was the only focus within that whole entire group, right? Was how skinny they are. Well, one of the gals came to see me literally 10 years later when I owned my gym. And she was like, I've had a hip replacement. She was a skier. She had injured herself, blew out her knee skiing. She was osteoporotic. So sure, she was tiny and she looked great in a size 2, right? While she was in her 40s, fast forward to late 50s, she was broken.
Yeah.
So women just don't realize, and people in general don't realize, right? That if you don't have any muscle to start, when you sustain injuries, what happens then? Yeah. That's where it becomes debilitating to your life. She was a golfer. She wasn't even really able to golf anymore.
Gosh, yeah.
All those things so that important. You love to do, if you focus on either being frail or the other end of the spectrum, not taking care of yourself at all and being overly fat, obese, at some point it does completely diminish your quality of life.
Totally. Totally. I mean, I couldn't agree with you more. And I think, you know, as I look at the kind of narrative that we see in the nutrition space, there's so much arguing, right? But when you actually look, it's arguments of people younger, and I'm saying 40s and younger,
right?
You know, and maybe even still in their mid 40s, they might still be arguing, but you get into your 50s, you know, like a 40 to 60, nobody is arguing. This is not the group that is saying, don't eat meat, it's bad for you. This is the group that's like, just like you, that's saying, hey, listen, you guys got to wake up.
Yeah.
This is really important. The way in which we age is totally, you know, there's a lot of it that we can actually account for, and it's really bad.
And at that age range, it starts to, like, the proof starts to be in the pudding, right? It's like, okay, well, you can do a lot of things in your 30s that worked, because, like, who knew the difference? And then all of a sudden you're almost 50 and you're like, fuck, that's
totally. Actually, and I don't know if you,
not really working so much anymore.
Yes. I don't know if you have kids, but it's kind of like the people that don't have kids and they're just like, oh, well, you know, can't you just, you know, leave the kids there, or I don't know, you know, stay up late, or, you know, why don't you just come meet us for dinner? And I'm just like, those are the people that don't have kids. You don't know what it's like to have like 2 little children under 2. Totally. We will not be on time. Like, it's just not going to happen. Right. The whole point of me saying that is people don't actually have the experience until they go through it.
Absolutely.
And you know, I see these people, it's just like so idiotic that there's all this arguing about how you should go plant-based and you should do this. And then you see, fast forward to these plant-based doctors, and it's rough.
It's terrible. I had watched another video of you, and I don't remember what show it was on. Excuse me for not remembering exactly what it was, where you were having this argument about plant-based protein and plant-based diets. And I want to dig into that, because you have a very, like, we are completely like-minded in this, and you have the medical degree to speak at a higher level to it than I do. So I would really like you to kind of give us your overview of this whole entire argument, and not in a sense of being right or wrong. It's just facts or not.
Okay.
Facts.
Well, here's the reality is that protein quality, that is hard, fast biological numbers. The sky is blue. This steak, a 3-ounce steak, has 2.5 grams of leucine in it. These are non-negotiable. This is what it is. The quality of the protein from steak versus broccoli is different. There's no opinion. These are the numbers. Mm-hmm. And what you're seeing out there right now is people are saying like, oh, well, plant protein is better for you. And it's just like, no, it's not. And no, the data doesn't actually support that. And no, it's not this emotional conversation unless it's very personal for you and you're not eating animal products for a reason that is ethical for you,
right?
But you cannot say, as it relates to health, that it's better for you. It's not. And if you care about protecting your muscle, then the number one thing that you can do is eat high quality protein. That's simple. That's true, right? And especially as you age, the difference between animal protein and plant protein is the amino acid profile. it is different. Amino acids are a highly complex topic. You're talking about 20 to 21 different factors as opposed to carbohydrates and fats. There's multiple amino acids. We have to account for that. And they're different. And they do different things.
And what about, like, you hear the term, and I've thrown it around too, about like a complete protein versus like an incomplete protein.
So great. I mean, so complete protein has all the amino acids, like all of them, versus an incomplete. For example, an incomplete protein would be collagen. Collagen is devoid of tryptophan and it's very low in the branched chain amino acids, right? Animal, you know, plant-based products are very low and if not totally negligent in methionine. So that is where you have to combine the protein sources. But if you get your protein from animal-based sources, you have a complete protein. That's simple. So why not just make it simple, you know? And the other aspect is the sky is blue. Yeah. The freaking sky is blue. Last time I checked, the sky is blue. Right? Yeah, no.
Not
your quinoa does not have the same biological composition of a steak. How does that make sense? Let's just talk about this logically. How does that make sense? It doesn't.
It doesn't make sense.
But you hear it's so ridiculous. If it was a bunch of people that just want to talk about it, then that's fine. But you can't do it in a way where then it puts other people's health at risk, which is exactly what happens.
Exactly. It's completely irresponsible. Right.
It's totally irresponsible.
So people with a really big voice or a really big audience, right, are impacting the most people. And unfortunately, this is just not just in nutrition or health or anything else. Totally. It's across the board anymore. We have a lot of people that really are talking about shit they don't know enough about to actually be teaching other people about it. Right. Especially when it comes to people's health. That is completely
irresponsible.
It's irresponsible and reckless. It really is.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that what we're seeing now is that there's more people that are not experts feeling like they're experts talking about a lot of things. And, you know, I think that that really lacks intellectual integrity. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if I'm not an expert in some area, I have no problem saying, you know what, this is not my expertise. We should ask someone else.
Exactly.
Or, you know, this is my professional opinion, but this is not my area of expertise, you know? So, and I think that the more people, it's weird. It's like, you can be very dangerous with a little bit of knowledge. And then the people that have at the top, they know the fundamentals, but they're always open to some kind of idea. And they will never say that, you know, I mean, I've been mentored by world-class experts and they never say, you know what, I'm the expert. They never say that.
No, I have a great quote. I put it out in my daily truths all the time that, like, the more you claim to know, the more you're proving how little you know.
Yeah.
Right? The people that are saying they know everything, those are probably the people you want to avoid.
Right, totally.
Because if you really do know a lot, you realize how much you don't know.
Right.
And are always open to learning more, which is exactly like why I have people like you on the show. Because I speak to this stuff, but it's outside my pay scale. Right. Yeah. To go deeper into the actual health benefits of protein.
Yeah. So it is the most important macronutrient and it is the most controversial, but it is the most important macronutrient because, you know, there's essential amino acids and the body does turn over. You have to be able to repair and rebuild. We cannot do that on our own. We just can't.
So let's give people some kind of just rough numbers as far as, because people will say, I do eat a lot of protein. And then when I would have them food log for me, I'm seeing, or my kids get a lot of protein. That's a great one. Well, they eat peanut butter. Right. Like, okay, newsflash, peanut butter isn't a primary source of protein. Okay.
So I love this question. So it's
what
one
foods
gram,
are in it? What foods really are protein that you should be qualifying as like a primary source of protein? And then how much? Because people think that they eat enough, but I would see food logs as little as like 15 to 20 grams per day.
Yeah. Oh my God.
That's dangerously low, right? So low. But then we put them on an in-body scanner, on the impedance scanner, and we can see that they have, you know, 38% body fat. So we would look at body fat compared to skeletal muscle mass ratios. And it was like, they far exceeded in body fat than they had in skeletal muscle.
Right. So for one of the recommendations that I always give is 1 gram per pound ideal body weight. I am a very tiny human. I am 5'1". I weigh 120 pounds. I eat 120 grams of protein.
Got it.
Simple. Another practical tip is that you really want to eat and ingest 30 to 50 grams of protein per meal, which is really important, especially as you age. You can get away with two large meals and then a small snack. So you front load the protein. Your first meal of the day has a very robust amount of protein, 50 grams. You can have a smaller snack. And then the last meal of the day needs to be equally as robust. And that will allow you to maintain skeletal muscle mass. And then you're optimizing that muscle protein synthesis that happens. And it's a really good strategy and very easy to do.
Yep. I teach protein first. So at every meal, every snack, whatever it is, it has to be protein first. And then kind of whatever else, like you need some micronutrients in there, but protein always first. And to turn on the right neural receptors first thing in the morning. So always protein. Can you speak to that a little bit? Because I throw that out there, but people, I think, oftentimes don't understand what exactly that means.
Well, there's some really interesting studies that show when you consume protein first as your first meal of the day, it actually allows for the brain and hunger satiety to kick in. So you are not hungry. You are actually the cues between hunger, right? This drive for food and then satiety, that kind of off switch seems to be regulated by these amino acids, which is fascinating.
Absolutely fascinating.
Yeah. I think that they originally came out of Tipton's lab, but she did MRI studies of teens having their first meal a day. And then she would show them pictures of like cupcakes or something. And the individuals that had a protein forward meal would be much less likely to go and eat whatever the junk food was.
Oh, that's fascinating.
And actually the impulses in the brain were much more diminished.
That leads me back to like what we were talking about at the beginning on the mindset of deprivation and stuff. If we're eating foods that allow us to feel satisfied from first thing in the day, then it becomes less and less about what can't I have throughout the rest of the day. It's more about like, you don't even want them.
Right. I totally agree. So, you know, it sets you up for success. And then the other thing that protein first does, it allows for blood sugar regulation. People often confuse this hunger with actually a drop in blood sugar, and you're constantly chasing blood sugar. But if you mitigate the insulin response by having an optimal protein meal first, then you're much less likely to get this ebb and flow of blood sugar, which would then drive you to eat, right?
Controlling moods, right? Mood swings, that very tired feeling, late afternoon, all of those things from regulating blood sugar, it transfers over into every aspect.
Totally. It's a no-brainer. I always think of it in this sense of augmenting willpower. It augments your willpower. Mm-hmm.
So what do you say when you had said your kind of just rough guideline of how much protein based on ideal body weight? What do you say? Because I know there's people that are like, I could never eat that much protein, or that's hard on my kidneys, or I've heard that you can't digest more than 15 grams per meal, or whatever these random numbers that somehow someone spewed out there and then they stuck. Right? Yeah. Like, what do we say to those people?
Well, the data actually supports protein for things like bone health, for kidney health. Healthy kidneys have no issue processing protein. In fact, it has the potential to improve their filtration rate. You know, the bone is made from protein. High quality protein helps bone quality. And if you can't eat that, I mean, can you really not eat that much protein? Can you really not eat 5 ounces of chicken or a 5 ounce steak? I mean, maybe you can't, but okay. I find that highly unlikely. I think it's more that individuals would rather have carbohydrates or fat.
Oh, and absolutely. Listen, you don't want to go that high, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm like, okay, I can eat that. If you don't want to go that high, then you can go a little bit lower, right? So this is at the high end, but is also defendable by science. So I could say you need 1 gram of protein per ideal body weight, per 1 pound of ideal body weight. That's at the high end. You can go a little bit lower. Yep. But the reason I chose the high end is because it's defendable and, you know, you can negotiate, are you going to have carbohydrates or fats, you know, after you eat a certain amount of protein?
Yep.
Totally understandable.
And also another misconception people have in their head or argument against so much protein is, well, I don't really like red meat, but delicate eaters, right? Like we know those people that are just by nature a little more delicate. My husband is actually a little more like that. When we go out to dinner, I'm the steak eater. Yeah. Because I'm just like by nature, I'm like, more aggressive. I like red meat. I've witnessed this and watched literally hundreds of people over the years. And it's very interesting to me. You get like a very kind of soft personality, soft-spoken teacher by nature. And then she'd be like, I just like to eat a tuna fish sandwich. I'm like, eat fish, right? Where you get more aggressive red meat eaters like myself. Like my husband eats the seafood. I eat more red meat. Like just by nature, that's what we each crave.
Yep. Makes sense. Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't have to be a medium rare, rare steak.
Right. Total. That's totally true. It doesn't. It could be, you know, it could even be a whey protein shake. That's even also okay.
What do you think about protein shakes as far as blood sugar regulation, like as far as first thing in the morning versus maybe like post-workout?
You know, I think that that protein shakes are are absorbed quickly. And when they're absorbed quickly, you may not feel as full. Mm-hmm. As it relates to muscle protein synthesis, it's just as effective.
Oh, okay. Good. I learned something.
Yeah. But people are not as satiated. It is just as effective.
Got it.
In fact, when you eat a meal, it can actually slow down the absorption.
Oh, all right.
But that being said, I don't actually drink protein shakes. I eat my food.
Yeah. See, same with me. Cause I'm like, I like to eat. So why would I, and the claim that people don't have time in the morning, so they do shakes instead. I'm like, well, hard boiled eggs and stuff are just as easy as a shake, right, if not quicker.
I agree. Right?
So this frailty issue and shifting mindset away from the desire to be frail, right? And we talked, you know, obviously a lot about the importance of protein and everything else, but let's talk a little bit about the downside to not having enough protein, not having enough muscle, and what frailty looks like.
And we've all seen it. You know, we've all seen our parents get older. We've all seen that individual is trying to cross the street and maybe on a walker or maybe in a nursing home. And it's bad. I mean, we probably don't even have to talk about the scientific definition. This is very a visceral feeling, right? We have all seen this.
Yep.
And this is, you know, typically over a period of time of inactivity. I mean, obviously there's other catabolic issues. You know, we're not talking about individuals with cancer. We're talking about frail individuals who have changed their lifestyle, done less over the years, mm-hmm. had to accommodate for injuries or just moving less, eating the way that they did in their 20s, not enough protein, not enough training, not enough resistance exercise. Mm-hmm. And that is very devastating. It's devastating for people.
And you used a word there that I really want to hone in on when you said catabolic, because I would see that a lot in female clients, that the exercise more, eat less, having no idea that they were kind of in a catabolic state vast majority of the time.
Right.
So although they may look lean and that may have worked during their 30s, it's not quite right. So much during their 40s. And then that looks like a complete shit show in their 50s and 60s, right?
Yes, it looks like a complete shit show. I agree with you.
So how does that happen? Like when you refer to catabolic, can you kind of explain?
Yeah, so, you know, a catabolic state is typically an illness state. You know, things like cancer, things that are, you know, any kind of infection is more of a catabolic state.
Yeah. And possible through not eating enough and compulsive exercise?
Yes, but when I think about catabolic state, so yes. And when I think about catabolic state is I think about essentially a hypermetabolic state.
Got it.
So that's more of, you know, individuals going through illness and then further restricting protein because for some reason they don't think it's good for them. And that's essentially what I think of. But yes, what you're talking about is long periods of not eating, which is also catabolic.
Yep. And surprisingly, what I see too is that a very, very calorically deprived diet. I mean, I can't tell you how many women I see that have those really high levels of body fat, such low skeletal muscle mass. Mm-hmm. And yes, but eat a huge caloric deficit.
Okay. That's interesting.
Older. So like they've yo-yo dieted, say for 20 years. Never really had a grasp on how to really make their body flourish, deprived it for years, and now are like eating less than 1,000 calories a day.
The body is
40% body fat.
Yeah, the body is very adaptive. The body has a way of really adapting, and it's not good.
So it's in like this starvation state.
Yeah.
So that, if so I'm wrong, it's starving. So it's like, I need body fat if I'm going to starve.
So people think that when you eat less, that you're just going to lose weight. And sometimes if you also train, you're just going to lose weight. That's not actually what happens. Mm-hmm. The efficiency of your metabolism actually decreases, which is so unusual.
So it's like slowing down, or like putting out, I've referred to it as like putting out this fire, your metabolism, this fire burning, and then you have nothing there. You're just putting out that fire instead of stoking it.
Yes.
Right. Awesome.
Interesting.
It's good stuff.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time out of your schedule. I greatly appreciate it. And before we kind of part here, will you let people know where they can follow you, where they can find you?
Yeah. People can find me on Instagram, Dr. Gabrielle Lyon. They can also find me on my YouTube channel, which is under the same name. And then my website, which you can sign up for my newsletter. I send out a great newsletter that I write, and I pick studies that I'm reading or podcasts that I'm doing or just new information that's coming out.
Okay.
And then if someone wanted to be a patient, they can apply also on my website.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah.
All right. Well, this was so helpful. I greatly appreciate it. I hope to connect one of these days soon in person.
I'm sure we will. Sounds great.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Okay. Bye.
Bye-bye.